The Warrior Soul podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Chris Albert. Our goal is to empower U.S. military veterans to live their absolute best lives. And we do that by providing tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that they can apply into their lives to become wiser, stronger, smarter, more resilient, and more capable human beings in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about here can obviously apply to you. And if you like what we have to say and the information we provide and the guests we bring on, please head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and review. It really helps to spread word about the show and to get this helpful information into the hands of more veterans so that they can in turn improve their lives and shape the future of this country. This podcast is brought to you by the amazing, the wonderful F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome, delicious packets of fats. These are portable snacks that you can carry with you anywhere. It's so hard to find a low-carb snack out there, but these guys have done it. They got macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with pecan butter. They've got awesome meat sticks, and they've got these delicious cheese snacks that they put out there. Plus, they're an amazing company. They send boxes of this stuff out to the troops on the front line. It's not something we ask them to do. It's something they volunteered to do. So if you want to get some of the best low-carb, high-fat snacks on the planet, head over to www.dropanfbomb.com. Use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout, and you'll get 20% off your first order. This podcast is also brought to you by the amazing, awesome people at Save the Brave. Save the Brave is an organization that provides camaraderie events for veterans. They do fishing events, they do golfing events, they do other sporting events, and they also do a lot of work to help Gold Star families. And look, we've all heard stories about veterans charities where the executive boards are taking these giant salaries, and I don't have a problem with that at all. But here's the thing. I want to make sure that whatever organization I'm talking about is doing amazing work. SaveTheBrave.org is doing absolutely outstanding work. Their board doesn't take any salary whatsoever, and they are having an amazing impact. They're focused on getting veterans to live their absolute best lives, and that's what this podcast is about, and that's why we wanted to work with them. So if you're interested in volunteering or donating to Save the Brave, head over to www.savethebrave.org and make your donation or your request today. Finally, this podcast is brought to you by Warrior Soul Apparel. This is a clothing company that I actually helped to start a couple of years ago as we were beginning the brand Warrior Soul. We've got some amazing t-shirts. We've got skivvy shirts with some pretty funny sayings on there, like, I love Jesus, but I cuss sometimes. We've also got some awesome hero shirts. We have the amazing Hard Times Breed Hard People series. And these are just great shirts that I've helped create. And they support the show. So if you're interested in getting some Warrior Soul shirts, head over to www.warriorsoul.shop. And finally, if you're interested in joining a new group that we are putting together here at Warrior Soul, a group for those who are looking to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries, stick around to the end. We'll have some information for you to check out. With that, let's get into the episode. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. And that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? I have an outstanding guest for you today. His name is Donnie O'Malley. You probably already know who he is if you're a veteran, and especially if you're a Marine. He's the creator of Vet TV. He's also the creator of
Irreverent Warriors, which is a 501c3 charity that does Silkie's hikes around the country. He's an author. He wrote the book Embarrassing Confessions of a Marine Second Lieutenant. And the guy is absolutely hilarious. He creates really, really funny content using humor that pretty much only veterans really understand. Some civilians might see some of his stuff and they might be like, wow, that's lewd. That's horrible. That's disgusting. But a lot of us who served, particularly in the infantry, we're going to get it. Now, here's the thing. You might be surprised that I'm having him on because we're so different. I'm pretty serious. At least I try to be. He seems extremely funny all the time. Here's the thing. He is an extraordinarily serious person. Yes, he is that funny guy that you see in the series. Yes, that is him. But there's a lot of work that goes into doing what he does. It's not simply just turning the camera on and being funny and putting this stuff out to the world. I mean, this guy created his own TV channel. The amount of work that goes into that is absolutely insane. And we go into that. He's amazingly talented and he is a workhorse. We go into his schedule. We talk about his daily routines, how he stays in shape. We talk about some of his meditation practices and some of the other things he does to keep himself healthy and sane with the crazy work schedule that he has. For those of you out there who are veterans who love him, you're going to get a whole lot out of this episode. For those of you out there who might be looking to start your own businesses or to start your own organization, there is so much you're going to get out of this episode. So pull out a pen, pull out a piece of paper, get ready to learn, get ready to be entertained, and get ready to listen to Mr. Donnie O'Malley. With that, let's get into the episode. Now we're on. Donnie O'Malley, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me.
Dude, so I was telling you, I just saw your new movie, A Grunt's Life, and I watched it the other night, and it was quite the movie, man.
That's amazing to hear. Thank you, bro. Appreciate that.
So you guys, you couldn't get that onto Amazon, right?
No.
Did they give you a list of reasons or anything like that? Or
No, it just said offensive content. And that's it. It's the only message that we got. We didn't have a conversation with somebody that was working with us to get it on there. We were just uploading the video to sell, just like anyone else can upload videos or books or whatever to sell on Amazon. Yeah. And you know, so it's like there's a QC process for their digital sales. And I'm imagining it's somebody in a cubicle that's supposed to watch stuff or skim through it. And they were just like, you know, I'm just thinking if it's somebody in a cubicle up somewhere near San Fran or Silicon Valley or something, they're just to them, it's just like, how dare they? No. And so what sucks is that there's no appeal process. So I'm assuming that people upload garbage all the time. And so they're just like, nah, you got one shot. And that was our one shot. There's no appeals. So it's like, okay, well, I mean, we got to sell this thing. So we're selling it on our platform in Vimeo. And then we are submitting to BitMax, which is the replacement for Distributor. Distributor went under. And so BitMax is going to submit it to Google Play, Vudu, Roku, Apple. They'll submit it to Amazon again, I hope. And we'll see how that goes. But nice. Right now, buy it on BetTV or Vimeo.
I watched it on Vimeo, and I enjoyed it a lot. The thing is, I served in the infantry, and that kind of humor, it's something I hadn't heard in a long time, right? And I was telling you before we got on, I was watching it, and my girlfriend the next day, she was like, would you have ever tried to have sex with a corpse? And I've been sick and I've been taking medication and things like that. And I accidentally blurted out, no, I would have never done that, but maybe a skull if I got the opportunity to do it, but never a corpse.
That's too far.
Yeah, exactly. That's way too far. It's far to, but I loved the humor in there. I thought the acting was great. I love the part where the mortar team was acting like pompous British officers. That made me laugh my ass off. But so pretty much everybody in our audience is going to know exactly who you are. But for like the two people who might not know who you are, could we just get a quick 5 minute or 3 minute background on you?
Sure thing. Okay, let me see if I can do this quickly. I grew up always wanting to be a Marine. I didn't join until I was 25. And then I joined as an officer after 5 years of college. I was in no hurry to graduate. I was trying to be Van Wilder, but my dad threatened my life if I took any more than five.
And I worked. Where'd you go to school?
San Diego State.
Nice. A lot of reason to do that down there.
Oh man, I'll tell you, I was my fraternity president twice, dude. Like, I had a good college experience. I'm actually, one of my life goals is to just relive college forever. you know, at some point I'll get myself settled down with a hot girlfriend who loves the college experience too, and then we'll have a family and keep reliving college but with the family. So that's the dream. But anyway, so I had to work full time to get health coverage, had some surgeries to get before I could join. Joined up at 25, infantry officer. First deployment to Southeast Asia on the 31st Muse. Second pump was to Afghanistan, Helmand, Musa Kayla, Nowzad, Zemindawar. And, you know, had a really interesting and fun but frustrating combat experience, you know, doing kind of counterinsurgency, but not really, but just doing raids, you know, and constantly, you know, that's why there's so many jokes about civilians in a grunt's life, is because that was the forefront of a lot of our thought, because we were trying so hard not to hurt them. Mm-hmm. And some people take that the wrong way. They're like, oh, you guys were, you know, murdering civilians. No, we're actually doing everything in our power to help them, protect them, and avoid hurting them while trying to fuck up the enemy as much as possible.
Right.
And so having the civilian stab us in the back quite often led to a lot of frustrations. So this movie was expressing those frustrations. So sorry, that was sidetracked. Finished my second pump. I was really banged up. I like to say I have a very strong mind, but a very weak body. I kept breaking and I never stopped. Finally, I had to have reconstruction on my ankle, shoulder. I had my right arm is paralyzed for a while. And, So went to Wounded Warrior Battalion, had some surgeries, got medically retired. While I was in Wounded Warrior Battalion, I really got deeper into the mindset of combat wounded, right? Which is another level of darkness.
Yeah.
And a lot of my comedy has kind of been driven by the thought of making those guys laugh, because those guys are really twisted and they put me to shame. And I'm just trying to catch up, you know, like the scene about necrophilia. It's like, I bet this would get those dudes in Wounded Warrior Battalion to laugh. And that's what I'm focused on. So anyways, Wounded Warrior Battalion, good friends there. One of them, I started a blog at the end of my career. And he was a big fan, turned some of my stories into a book, Embarrassing Confessions of a Marine Lieutenant. Right before I published, my biggest fan and my friend killed himself. And before he died, he was like, yo, dude, Your shit is the only thing in my life that can make me laugh hysterically. Thank you. He's like, you're doing God's work. Literally, very, very powerful text message he sent me. And so then I'm all fucked up in the head. I'm like, okay, how do I deal with the suicide thing? What can I do? So I ended up retweaking the book and had this message about suicide awareness and prevention. And then that then led to the first Silky's hike that I ever did. Just trying to get some of these guys together. Just to like, I've been throwing parties for my friends since I was like 16.
Yeah.
And I like to think I'm a funny person and I attract funny people. So I've been getting funny people together since I was 17. And I'm like, a bunch of the guys I went to combat with, some of the funniest dudes I ever met, and mostly the sergeants, the staff sergeants. And I'm like, let's just get together and go hiking and stop at bars and just have a good day. And then that blew up all over the country. So I incorporated a nonprofit to kind of manage these events that are popping up and make sure they're safe and intent is pure and that there's some level of standards and quality. And then I focus on the nonprofit. I didn't even push my book at all for like 9 months. And then running a nonprofit, got really frustrating because I didn't know what I was doing. And, running volunteers from all over the country, trying to figure out how to run this thing. And then finally started making some videos to market my book because I'm like, yeah, I need money. I set out here to be a professional writer. And then my dream was always I'm going to start out writing and then I'm going to make short films and then longer films. And then I'm going to have my Happy Madison production company. That was my life's plan. And I never planned on doing it for the military community. But after my military experiences, I'm like, I'm pretty connected to this community here. Yeah. And I like making this community laugh. And I feel at home here. And I think they really want this. So I started making videos that were similar to my book, just meant to make combat grunts laugh.
Yeah.
And the videos hit. It one after another. Hit. They're all going viral amongst the grunt community. And then dudes are like, yo, I would pay for this, man. No one's doing this. You know, Matt Best was making hysterical video. He saw some of the funniest shit I've ever seen, but he wasn't telling stories like I was. Like these short, very realistic stories.
Right.
So
right.
I'm like, okay, I'm the first to market here. Let me see what I can do. And then I'm like, how do I monetize this? Well, I can't sell individual videos. There's no way to monetize that, especially because I knew I couldn't produce things longer than 5-10 minutes. So realistically, what can I charge for that? And what do I get back after any of the distribution methods like Amazon take their cut? It's like, no, that won't work. I need a subscription service. So I Googled how to start my own Netflix. On the first page, there's this group called Black and Sexy TV that it was a couple of filmmakers who felt like that entertainment for the Black community was being watered down and didn't accurately represent their experiences. So they wanted to create a network that they felt had television shows that recreated their experiences. I'm like, replace the word Black with veteran and I'll do the same shit. And I'm like, I saw they had 12,000 people paying $7 a month or $7.99. I'm like, I can get 12,000 people to pay $5 a month. And I'm just running rough numbers. I'm like, if I get, this many thousand people, $5 a month, how much did it cost me to make those other videos? Realistically, how much are the costs going to go up? And doing math, I'm like, okay, I can make this work. I can start small and grow this. And then put together this big plan, trademarked all the brands and everything. And then I didn't tell a soul until I trademarked everything. And then I put this blog post out there that was like, VetTV. It's going to be the Netflix of the military community. It's going to be like Comedy Central. We're going to have this, this, and that. I had all the shows lined out. We're going to have a show that's like The Office. We're going to have a show like Scrubs, a show like Friends, a show like Generation Kill. It's going to have, something for the Air Wing, something for Motor T, for Army Medics, for Navy Corpsmen, all this just shows. I had it all mapped out in my head and then put it together in a Kickstarter campaign, threw it out there to the world, got a bunch of friends, guys I served with in my platoon, and then guys from the nonprofit and girls. And then just like, yo, I need someone to make an email list. Hey, bro, you want to learn how to do this? Here's some Google links. Learn it and fucking do that. Hey, dude, I need you to reach out to all the Facebook groups who might find our shit interesting. Find them out, make a tracker. Boom, 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 boom. If we succeed, you'll get a cut of the total money raised. And so that's how I incentivized everybody and then, distributed the jobs. Nobody had any idea what the fuck we were doing. And then I'm like, okay, we got to make a video that is the greatest fucking video for post 9/11 veterans. Cause I'm like, I got to focus it. Post 9/11 is where it's at because I don't think anybody else is on social media, and social media is the only way we're going to market this. So let's just make post 9/11 vets feel like this is for them. So I was like, we got to make a video that speaks to them, that makes them laugh, that shows that we can recreate their experiences, and that shows that we can do it with a quality nobody else is doing. And so I'm just like, I think we can do this for $20,000. And then we did exactly that for 20 grand. It came out exactly as I envisioned it, thanks to
Which video was that? Because the first one I saw was the chick who got through IOC.
No. So that was the first one I ever made.
Gotcha.
That was out on YouTube. And that was, there was no budget for that shit. I was just like doing everything myself. Had a buddy help me with a little bit of camera work for some of those first videos. But otherwise, I was doing pretty much all of it. And then after that, the first video that we spent 20 grand on, that was going to be the main video that got all the views for the Kickstarter campaign. That one was where they start out in World War II in a church and then moves into a tent in Iraq.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And that video was really, really good. That spoke to a lot of people. It did exactly what I hoped it would do. And had some good messages being communicated about our sense of humor and the way we deal with things. And it was shot so brilliantly. Had amazing filmmakers help me with that one. Had a huge, huge team, cast and crew. Had people come from all over the country to be a part of that video. And that was before we even launched the campaign. That was just like, yo, we're going to do this Kickstarter. This is going to be the main video. Who wants to be a part of it? So that was it. That was how Vet TV was started. And did the Kickstarter. Was successful. Raised 300K. Now I'm like hiring staff. Like, yo, I can't pay much, but I promise if we make more money, you'll make more. And we just keep trucking from there. We made the first show, Kill, Die, Laugh, the Chappelle Show of the Military. Mm-hmm. Filmed it, edited it, then showed it live in San Diego and Texas, then started airing it. And then right after the network launched, we went and filmed the Grunts Live. They didn't have the money to finish the Grunts Live. Mm-hmm. But we had the date set and we're like, oh, well, we're going. And found someone to lend me the rest of the money, a good friend of mine, to lend me the money and finish the thing out. And that show essentially built the network. That's like what a Game of Thrones is to HBO. That is what a Grunt's Life is to Vet TV. Kick things off. And it was a rough start in the beginning, you know, like after Grunt's Life aired. What's that?
That's an insane story, man. I mean, to be able to throw that kind of stuff together, because, you know, my business is nowhere near as big as yours. And I think about the amount of work I put into it, you know, just producing this show and putting out the content that we put out and trying to bring disparate people together. I think, you know, with the size of what you're doing and the scope of what you're doing and the vision, that is an amazing story of being able to take things, to put them together in a way that helps you to get off the ground so that eventually you can scale. And what I don't think a lot of people realize is how much your balls are on the line when you're doing something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. First off, thank you. And second off, it was fucking miserable, dude. Like straight up. I was running, you know, 15, 16 hour days standard. Did nothing in life. I told all my friends, my family, I got to disappear. Don't even invite me. Like I'm the dude who's been throwing parties for my friends since I was 17. And I was like, yo, I got to retire. Like, don't even invite me to anything because I don't want that distraction. And so I lived in a little hobbit hole in my grandmother's sunroom for years, starting both the nonprofit and then Vet TV. Got unhealthy for a lot of it, take a lot of caffeine, a lot of Adderall. I would go 2 days straight once a week, every week for like a year and a half. Some weeks I would go 2 days straight twice a week. I mean, and I'm talking like through the middle of the night, taking Adderall, work till like 6, 7 a.m., give myself a little break, have some breakfast, go for a run, then get back, take another one, fucking powering through the day. Because it just never stops. Because I was the only writer. I'm writing television shows and then co-directing them, producing them, and then trying to run this business. it was so unhealthy. And, you know, it's just like the way I looked at it was, I don't intend for this to last forever, but if I want to build something great, I got to suck it up for a little while. And I need to, it's very simple. It's sacrifice my body. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Sacrifice my mind. Sacrifice my fun. Sacrifice my sanity. It's just like, sometimes you just got to suck it up for a bit and be a little miserable and just fucking push through some pain, knowing that if you can handle it, there's a lot of cool stuff on the other side.
Let me ask you this, because I know that you can do that, right? I know that you can push. How did you convince others to be able to do so as well at the time? Like, what allowed them, what got them motivated in order to sign up for all that?
So I'm very fortunate, right? The people who started, the main filmmaker, Braden, he, you know, his dream was to make great films. Like, that's all he wants to do is be a filmmaker. He wants to make amazing films. And so coming into this, it's like, he loved the concept. He has the same humor. This is all his humor too. So it's like, we're constantly laughing as we're conceptualizing stuff. And, you know, filmmakers are visionaries. We have a vision in our head. Mm-hmm. And from the time there, we go from the vision in our head to the screen in some period of time. And he saw everything that we conceptualized, or I conceptualized, helped me refine the vision, and then helped bring that vision to reality, because this was his passion. And anyone in entertainment knows this is one of the most competitive industries in the world. Mm-hmm. So the work ethic in entertainment it's insane. That's why it's an unhealthy work ethic. You do not see your family. Don't see your kids. You don't go work out as much as you did. You don't play in sports leagues. You don't go to happy hour. You don't do that. You jump at every single opportunity presented in front of you to further your dream of making films. Because there are so many people that have these big, insane dreams of making films, and they're all willing to sacrifice it all to make these dreams reality. And so Braden had the ethic. John Acevedo is his dream. He's as passionate about creating business as we were about making film. So John was willing to push too. And everyone else that we recruited, it's like they all had aspirations in entertainment, whether it was just being an actor, a comedy writer, a director, filmmaker, you name it. You know, I'm pulling talent from a pool of people who understand the ethic required to succeed in entertainment. And that ethic is inspiring and unhealthy. So I was pulling people with the ethic, and it wasn't that hard. Although sometimes it was hard, because what I was asking of them was not normal. And, you know, I was, you know, everybody sees me as this very lovable comedian, and that's who I am deep down. That's who I want to be. But I wasn't that for the first year and a half. I was like Steve Jobs. I was straight, like, I don't care about anything else in this life, in your life, but what this business needs you to do now, tomorrow, this week, this month. This is life. And everyone rallied around that. And that's how we were able to make the unthinkable happen.
Now, you said that for the time it was unsustainable. I'm assuming now you scaled a bit, you have more help now, things are not like they were, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, we have been steadily, you know, as the business has grown, and there was some, after a grunt's life, that was a really hard time. I was hitting up friends for money to make payroll. Mm-hmm. I had to tell my people, yo, I don't know if I can pay on the 15th of December, which was miserable.
Yeah.
And then finally got a loan to make payroll. And then we got our, our revenue deposit on the 1st of January. And so we dodged that bullet. But you know, we're a cash business. We have no investments. So everything that we do is it's a freaking, it's like scratching. And, and as we have grown, everyone's pay has grown and everyone's quality of life has improved. Because now, as we've been able to hire more people, the few people that we had didn't have to do all of those jobs. Now we're bringing people down from doing six different jobs to doing two jobs. And that improvement of quality of life, I think, you know, we should probably ask my people, but I think that's been a part of why they have stuck around, because they're watching their paychecks go up. They're watching their time come back to them. They're watching the quality of the things that they are making as professional filmmakers go up. And for a filmmaker, that's exciting. And then, you know, we give them health benefits, and then we get an office, and then we're buying them equipment, new computers, phones, tablets, you name it. And it's like everyone is watching things get better. And, I think that that's a part of why they have stuck around, and why we have this we always have something to look forward to. Like, we're looking forward to the next pay raise. We're looking forward to the bonus. We're looking forward to the new laptop. We're looking forward to the next show that's going to be way better than the last one.
Yeah.
There's always something to look forward to. We're going to work with this new actor that everybody loves on the next production. Everyone's excited to work with this actor. It's cool.
And as a leader, did you have to go through a psychological shift as you were growing and say, all right, maybe I shouldn't be worrying about this stuff. Maybe I should be focusing on a higher level. Did that come about? And did you have any issues with that?
All the time. Came about all the time. Have issues with it all the time. Elevate and delegate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The higher the level I'm operating, the greater the impact I can make on the business. And I am so consistently slammed that I haven't had the luxury of operating as high as I've wanted to. It's been like, you know, I've struggled to get ahead on a whole bunch of things, hire some people, task some, delegate some stuff, and then spend some time thinking big picture. I also meditate a lot. And I, when I exercise, I usually smoke weed, exercise by myself. And I just kind of break down, I process everything that exists in my mind. And that has helped me build these little pockets of 2 hours where I'm able to think at a higher level and break out of the grind. It's also helped keep me sane. I've been able to do that. But it's always a struggle to free my mind up to be able to think that way. And the goal is always to get there. So the next step is probably going to be executive assistant. Really, really talented person to take that job, and that will free me up to do
that. What type of meditation are you doing?
I do a little bit of transcendental. That's mostly the mornings. And then in the evenings when I'm doing my exercise, I don't remember the name of it, but I'm not purely focused on my breathing. I am focused on my movement, breathing, and then allowing my mind to go wherever it wants to go, right? Focusing on the breathing, it's like there's so much in my head. It's like at some point in the day, I have to just let my mind roam. Right. And so I get a little bit of the transcendental, and then the other, I don't know what it's called, I'm literally just exploring my mind. And I come up with some of my best stuff when I do it. And I always have my recorder with me so that when an idea comes in, I grab my phone, I hit record, I record it. And then, I go through the recordings every few weeks and I'll implement you know, the best of the cream of the crop. And then I do another type. There's another name for it. I forget, but you know, I have disconnected so much from so many people in my life these last 4 years that I have made a conscious effort to reconnect with people that I love. So I will set an intention, say, okay, I want to think about my mother and I want to focus on her life, everything that she has done for her community and her students and her family. And then I'll smoke, I'll sit there on my couch and I'll stare into space and I'll just think about my mom.
Oh, that's called metta.
Metta?
Nice. Yeah, it's called metta. It means loving kindness. So
yeah,
you bring somebody to mind and then you think to yourself that you want the best for them, that you want to deliver them from pain and evil and all these things. And that's helped me quite a bit as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And then when I'm done, I will call that person or send them an audio message saying, basically running through the movie that I just played in my own head about them. And I'll tell them what I saw and tell them that basically that I appreciate what an incredible person they are and everything that they have done for me. I knew this mom, brother, grandma, aunt, uncle, my friends, my employees. And it has really improved my relationships with the people that I love.
That's amazing, brother. That's amazing. So on a daily basis, right, what's your typical daily schedule like? You know, wake up, you head to work, or what times are you working out? What times are you getting food in, that kind of stuff?
I have changed actually fairly recently. What I've changed to. I'll get up at 6. Or no, I'll set my alarm for 6. I'll take a caffeine pill where I open up the pill. I dump out half the powder. So I'm only getting 50 milligrams of caffeine. And I have the pill sitting on my nightstand next to my bed with my pH balanced water that I love now. I'm addicted to it. and I'll take that when my alarm goes off, which is really happy music. Then I go back to sleep, take the pill, go back to sleep. And my next alarm goes off 20 minutes later. Turn it off, meditate for 10 minutes, come out of bed, grab food immediately, which is usually like fruit, yogurt, chocolate milk, and peanut butter. And then I go work out. And as I'm working out, I'm playing music, I'm dancing, I'm shadow boxing, I'm stretching, lifting some weight. And then that like gets me in an amazing mood because my body feels so much better, heart rate's up, all that shit. And then, I usually go into work by 9, and then I usually have meetings for the entire freaking day. Usually a writer's meeting to start the day where we'll workshop one of our scripts. And that'll be an hour, usually 2 hours for that writer's meeting. And then we'll have a meeting with one of the directors and we'll go through one of their episodes. This is usually the episode that's releasing the next week or 2 weeks away. And all of the directors will sit around, writer directors will sit around the screen, we'll watch it, and then we'll give notes to the director and say, yeah, this scene right here, it really dragged on for me. I thought we could have sped things up. This scene right here, I didn't like the acting. I didn't believe it. That's my big thing is acting. I'll look at his eyes. Look at that. What is he thinking? I don't think that's what you're trying to communicate here in this scene, but his eyes are saying that. So how do we get around it? And then we all talk through how to solve these problems with our scenes and our shots. And then I'll have another meeting for finance, another meeting with human resources. And, you know, there's just 50 million people I need to talk to and things that I need to do. And all the while, it's like I'm just delaying the time until I can get some time alone to go through my emails and make big decisions. Mm-hmm. And then usually leave work at like 6 or 7 and then come home and then ideally do some sort of exercise again. Maybe it's just cardio. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my exercises in the morning are really light. So then I'll do something hard at night for like 1 hour. Sometimes with weed, some lately it's been without just because of my time. And then I go back to work after that for, you know, maybe an hour or two, and then, eat dinner, and I review my day and make sure that I planned my schedule for the next day, before I get in bed. And I try to plan out a couple days as far as I can in advance, but at least the next day I try to have the whole schedule made, and then all lights off, no screens, nothing, knock myself out by midnight at the latest. I've been trying to get that down, to give 7 hours instead of six. Cause I've deprived my body of so much sleep these last few years that I'm like, I'm going to fight to get my sleep every single night. So that's pretty much my day every day.
Now, when it comes to cannabis usage, what brought you to that? I use cannabis regularly. I have autoimmune disease, so I have ulcerative colitis. I use it in it's brutal. And that's one of the reasons why I've been sick lately. But what brought you to cannabis? What kind of brought it into your life?
Brought it. So I first met Mary Jane when I was 16. Mm-hmm. And just instant attraction to her. I like that she frees up my imagination. Mm-hmm. And she helps me maintain my childlike imagination is really, I think, the best way to put it. And I've used Mary Jane ever since. I didn't start smoking more until I want to say 18. Mm-hmm. In college. And especially in the summers, when I was back at my parents' house in the summertime, I would go out to my Cadillac and I'd sit in the back seat and I'd smoke by myself. Yeah. And I would just let my mind roam. And I enjoyed that time so much. And I pretty much only smoked alone for many years, like through college, sometimes in groups, but in groups, it was never that enjoyable. I just liked my alone time with Mary Jane. Joined the military, didn't touch it till I got out. When I came back, I realized that if I approached weed with an intention, I could have that intention realized. If it was the right kind of weed, which is generally sativa, is what I appreciate the most.
Me too.
It just speeds my mind. People think that I'm on cocaine when I smoke weed because it just frees up my spirit. And, you know, just being an entrepreneur, employing people, being responsible for their livelihoods and taking on this commitment, it's like I live with a high level of stress, this anvil on my chest all day, every day. And I have to be really, really focused in order to succeed. But my natural inclination as a dude is to, I'm literally a big fucking 12-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly fighting my urges to make a joke out of everything on a daily basis. And, in the Marine Corps, you know, because I had bosses, I was a lowly lieutenant, you know, there were plenty of opportunities for me and the other lieutenants to just goof off as kids.
Right.
I don't really have that anymore because I'm everybody's boss. And so I have to constantly be on in order to make good decisions and take things seriously. And it's like the serious side of me is really serious. Nobody likes it. Not one person I asked. Nobody likes me when I'm being serious, not even myself. Mm-hmm. And so what weed enables me to do is I focus it. I make sure that I've accomplished the thing. I will not smoke unless I've got done what I need to get done. Because even if I smoke when I have a ton of shit to do, it's a shitty experience. Mm-hmm. It's like I have to clear my mind first. I have to feel good about it. And the only thing that clears my mind enough is work and accomplishment. I have to earn it. I have to earn my high time. Mm-hmm. And when I do so, then I can get out of it whatever I want. I can go to a Silky's hike and I'm the loudest, craziest guy at the hike. Just dancing all over the place, making people laugh, but not making bad decisions like I used to do when I drank, and just being silly and loving without any anxiety or expectation. I just feel like I'm hanging out with my family. Or when I want to film a vlog video, I'm just going nuts, allowing my mouth to say whatever my mind is thinking. And certain times when I want to focus on the parent or whatever, it's like, it's all intentional, but it's all earned. I have to earn that time for myself and for my mind. And weed has really, really helped me to connect with myself, really. And to get really deep into my own mind, which when I do that, I find that good things happen. I create better, I make better decisions. I can love the people in my life more. So that's what it's brought to me.
A lot of what I'm seeing here is you know enough about yourself to realize that childlike behavior, that childlike state is part of what makes you you and what makes you extraordinary. And so,
thank you.
Given all the responsibility that you have, it's kind of you had to organize your life and fight so that you can maintain that in a way, right? Am I getting that right?
You're 100% right. Absolutely.
I think that's...
I work hard. I'm sorry to cut you off, but you just said something that I really liked, and I like to articulate it in a way that I hope will stick with some people. But I have, you're familiar with flow state?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. I have gotten better at knowing myself and knowing when I am being the best version of myself. And doing so has enabled me to plan out my days and my weeks so that I've got these little pockets of time when I'm operating in a flow state. And that flow state is when I'm being the child that I am and that I've always been, but that I had to repress for a while. And I've found that it's like, I will fight to maintain these little pockets of time, even if it's just an hour, because it's really, really good for my mental health, and myself and everyone around me is better for it. When I'm able to find those moments, those opportunities for flow state. And it has been really, really good for mental health, but I have to fight and structure and organize my life in order to find those moments to bring the best out of me. And what I try and impart on the people that I work with is to do the same thing. Identify what is it that you are so good at. You can say with confidence that there aren't that many people that have that same talent that you have. What is that talent? How do you find the time to manifest that talent and harness it, hone it? And then what makes you the most, when are you the most happy? When do you have this borderline unexplainable feeling of joy and ecstasy without substance? When do you have that? And how can you create a life that facilitates having that feeling as often as possible? And when you're a hardworking professional, it's not going to be as often as you want, but it can still be there in your weeks and in your days. And I think everyone should look to find those moments of happiness and flow.
Have you ever ventured toward other types of plant medicines, psychedelics, and things like that?
No, I did shrooms a little bit, but it was so little. It wasn't a, you know, proper shroom trip. And I'll explore that at some point, but I am, and that's it. That's it. Actually, no, the occasional Molly. I think I'm going to give myself one or two times a year for Molly, special occasions. Mm-hmm. And those will be planned out, you know, like 6 months, a year in advance. But aside from that, I know I'm in a place that is very focused, Mm-hmm. And as long as I continue to execute and work properly on the track that I'm on, then the visions that I have are going to continue becoming reality. I'm scared of having a really intense shroom trip or acid trip or any of the other psychedelics. I'm scared of having a trip that changes my perspective.
Right.
Because there are a lot of people depending on me to execute on these visions. And because I'm a very intense guy, I'm afraid that if my perspective has changed and then I'm like, oh no, I shouldn't be doing this. I should be doing this. This is my path. This is my purpose. And mm-hmm. and then all the people that are depending on me are like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? We got a business to run, you know? Like, I'm afraid of that. So I'm going to postpone that until I am more replaceable. And then I'll venture out into other stuff.
I think just based off of my own experience with like dimethyltryptamine and other things, I think one of the things that's for a time and place where yeah. you're at a crossroads in your life and you're actually setting an intention to try to find something.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah. So I think you've got a great perspective on that. Let me switch gears here just a bit. And let me ask you this. What do you think people's greatest misperception of you is?
You know what? I think it is that I'm a misogynistic asshole. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from some of my earlier videos. So feel kind of bad about that. Because I'm the opposite. I'm more of a feminist now than anything. I want so badly to decrease the amount of chicks who get fucking raped.
Mm-hmm.
It's like every single chick I talk to, especially military women, they were raped at some point. They were in the military. And it's like, there's so much rape. And it's crazy to me because when I was in a grunt unit. There were no females on our base. I never heard of the word sexual assault in my unit. Right. Whether it was, you know, against military women or guys in my unit doing it, you know, outside in town, I never heard it. Maybe it happened in another company and I just didn't, you know, hear about it, but I never heard it as a lieutenant in an entire infantry battalion. So then I get out. And, you know, through my nonprofit, there's tons of women. The nonprofit's been run by women since day one. And I'm hearing these stories. And for the most part, the first few years, dated military women primarily. And I'm hearing these stories. I'm like, what is going on here? Like horrible, like atrocious stuff. So it's like opening up my eyes. And I'm like, there's got to be something. And then I think to like, you know, what could it be? Well, maybe it's that within the military, but especially the Marine Corps, there is this intense animosity, resentment, and even hatred towards female Marines. Mm-hmm. And that resentment comes from what I've heard. One, an unequal standard. Like, what the fuck? We're supposed to be Marines. Why are there two standards? You know, all you're taught is a Marine is a Marine. There's no difference between MOS or color. But it's like, well, there is a difference because there's a different standard. And that I've seen hatred in dudes and the way they talk about it, like hating their existence in the Marine Corps. And I'm like, that's a horrible thing. Further, there is a general perception of women as the lesser. And it's like, we look at our enemies like they're the lesser because it's easier to kill them. When black people were slaves, it was easier to look at all blacks as a lesser because it's easier to keep them as slaves and treat them like shit. You've done the same thing to gays, done the same in transgender, the same thing to women. You just look at them like they're the lesser. When you look at them like they're the lesser, it's easier to treat them like shit. So now you've got this culture where I don't think there's that many rapists in the military. You know, they're there. There are fucking predators, but mm-hmm. I don't think there's that many. But I think the problem is that when the culture looks at women as the lesser, it makes it easier for the predators to get away with it. And it makes it easier because just in general, military culture has less respect for human life because it's your job to take it. You have less respect for feelings. And so when some young female Marine comes and says, hey, I think I was sexually assaulted last night, then, you know, it's easier for the first sergeant's or gunny's first reaction to be like, okay, slow down here. You know, I've seen you flirting with those guys. Maybe you guys were just drinking and things got out of hand. It's easier to do that when you perceive them as the lesser and when you don't have as much respect or care for feelings. And so it's like there's all these little things in the culture that I think are leading to sexual assault happening more often than it should. Well, it should never happen. But I now want to try and affect that part of culture. And it's a hard thing because as a grunt, like I want to make sure that grunt culture stays brutally savage and barbaric. Right. Because I'm going to make sure that my country wins wars. And, you know, all that if we go fight China and they use their electrical impulses to fuck up all of our electrical equipment, mm-hmm. there's only one thing that's going to get us through these battles. And that is a passionate, burning bloodlust, right. Like a barbaric desire to murder. And a lot of people don't understand that. They're turned off by that thought. But it's like, you cannot survive as an infantry and expect to win wars without romantic bloodlust, right? Without killing being the pinnacle of your existence. So it's like, I got on that side. I want to speak to warriors and maintain that. Why? Because right. I'm a fucking patriot and I want to make sure my country wins wars so that we maintain our independence. But on the other hand, I want to treat women better. I want to decrease misogyny. I want to decrease sexual assault. So it's this weird thing I got going on and, you know, I got a lifetime to figure it out. But that's the direction that I'm going. So that's my regret.
Yeah. We're also at kind of like an interesting time and place, I think, in our history where a lot of this stuff has come to light and there's been reactions, there's been overreactions, there's been a lot of, you know, between the Me Too movement and everything else that's happened, there's a lot of people out there who, and I think men who are scared, right? Who are scared of what's going on, scared of what the future might hold. At the same time, it's always been a problem. And it's something that I think you're right. We have to fess up to, and it's a culture that we need to change. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it's gotta be attacked on multiple fronts. I think that the notion of masculinity that can't go away because mm-hmm. there are elements of being masculine, of being aggressive, of being right. violent, confrontational, that mm-hmm. are necessary in society. Not just in the military or the police or first responders, but just in society. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is bullies are going to exist. And you're going to need some people that have the desire, the drive, the aggression to go crack bullies in the face. Like that has to exist, right? Evil's there. And it's just not acknowledging that is damaging. I think an equalization of all military standards, at least the Marine Corps standard, needs to happen. And I think that, a general understanding of what's necessary for our nation to win ball games mm-hmm. in at the combat sport. An understanding of that, I think, needs to also exist amongst with a host of other things, including an understanding of for men of like back when I was a piece of shit, why did I ever generalized shitty things about women? It's because some girl that I wanted, that was above me, that was on a pedestal, that I desired, rejected me, made right. me feel unwanted, unloved, unliked, unattractive, whatever. And that feeling led me to say, fuck bitches.
Right. Fuck and that's the big reason why we see that incel movement that, you know, led to mass shootings and all these different things, right?
Yeah. It's all built out of pain. And I think if more dudes could just acknowledge mm-hmm. that the reason you have all this shit against women is because some woman has hurt you. I think they just fucking owned it. That alone could help a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Just like, who hurt you, dude? Like, oh, you got dumped? Oh, a girl cheated on you? Join the club. Doesn't mean you fucking want to go hate all of them. You know what I mean? Like, it's a stupid, immature, pathetic mindset.
Let me ask you this, brother, and I know we're coming up on time. You know, we've had these issues in the veteran community for a while, right? You know, from veteran suicide, veteran homelessness. We've got actually a very, very significant public health problem in the veteran community. A lot of people don't know this, but one in four veterans checking into the VA system already has full-blown diabetes. And as we're moving forward with our time, getting further and further removed from our time in service, it seems like a lot of these issues have not gone away and aren't going away. And you know, I talked to a lot of veterans, and you had mentioned the savagery. You'd mentioned that aspect, which I think is absolutely necessary, not just for active duty military members or first responders, like you said. It's also for men in general. Has to be an aspect of our personalities. But what I hear from a lot of these guys is that they don't think they have a place in the civilian world. They think that they don't have, that nobody really understands them. And when they go to work, they're not being understood, and people are taking them the wrong way. What would you say about this? And what would your response be to somebody who's having difficulties right now with their transition?
I'm so pumped to answer this right now. Okay. So my inclination in general, as a person who wants better for our community and for society and culture in general, mm-hmm. is to put the onus on the people. All of those that are experiencing things. Mm-hmm. Step one is, what did I do to get myself here? What did I not do? What did I fuck up? What did I forget, ignore? And what can I do to improve my situation? So, for example, I've been hearing that shit for years.
Right.
The one thing is, I don't have purpose. Right. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not. I used to care for Marines. And that was my purpose. That's why I existed. And now I get out and I don't have any purpose. Well, bro, nobody's going to hand you a platter of fucking purpose on your way out the main gate, dude. Like, nobody told me that it was my job to build a sense of community. No one said it was my job to help reduce suicide. Mm-hmm. I gave that purpose and mission to myself. Why? Because I have this crazy thing called free fucking will. Right. And I decided this is what I'm going to do. And life was that simple. And I wish more people would understand how simple life can be when you embrace free will, and embrace the power of your choices, and to get rid of the victim mentality, because there is always something more that you could have done. There is not a single horrible thing that happens in my life when my first thought is, fuck, okay, what could I have done? What could I have done? What could I have done? And there are many instances when I'm just dealing with a fucking tard. Like, this person just GT score of 18. But I still think to myself, how can I communicate better to them? And that's the first thing that I think people need to do, is make an effort to communicate better. So it's people, someone's in an office. They're like, oh, I feel like nobody understands me. Mm-hmm. Did you make an effort to communicate better so that they understand you? Did you make an effort to understand them better first? Usually not. What I hear a lot of time is, man, these people, all these fucking civilians suck, man. They don't get my sense of humor in the fucking workplace. They're all fucking looking at me like I'm crazy and shit. They don't like it when I curse. It's like, well, I'm seeing a lot of things you can do to remedy your situation, dude. Right. I don't think just blaming everyone else for sucking is the right move. And further, you don't have to work there. So maybe what you could do, if you don't want to improve your communication, improve your fucking resume, improve your skills. Go to this crazy thing called Google and say, how to build websites, how to do graphic design, how to do video editing, how to do computer coding. I taught myself every part of this fucking business with YouTube and Google. So when someone tells me that, well, I don't know how to do this and that, I just want to slap them in the fucking face. Did you Google it? Did you watch a single fucking YouTube video on how to do that thing? Mm-hmm. No? Then shut up. It's that right. My inclination is to humble people for their just fucking the excuses that they put in front of themselves. It's really sad and it's annoying because I see so many civilians that have been given less opportunity than them, less training than them, and they make so much more out of life. It's like, if they can do it, why can't you? How about you build up your resume and go find another job that puts you in an environment where people understand you more? Or what are you going to do? You're just going to sit there in an environment that you don't like and just come home and complain about it every day, or go make a post on Facebook about how much civilians suck, about how much you can't stand the kids in your college classes. I took a bunch of community college classes too. Mm-hmm. It cost me $200 a fucking class. I got the best education I ever fucking had at a community college while I was still an active duty Marine captain. As I'm Google, YouTube, and taking the occasional college classes, I dealt with the same fucking stupid kids, the same fucking libtards, the same naive people that have bare minimum perspective on the world. I dealt with them too. But for some reason, I didn't have this attitude of, oh, they're all stupid, fuck all them. No, I educated them. I got them sitting in circles with their hands underneath their chins, or the chin on their hands, listening to me talk. Why? Because I felt like I had an audience that I could influence. And I took the initiative and I did. And when my communication wasn't working, I fixed it. I took 3 or 4 classes on writing, multiple classes on speaking. And it works. Fix yourself, fix your situations. That's what I would say to everyone.
Dude, I mean, that is absolutely solid advice. I think, you know, there's this, you know, something that a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people say that there's not enough help out there for veterans. You know how many 501c3 charities there are in existence
42,000.
Today? No, it's 433,000.
Jesus!
433,000 charities that are dedicated to serving the veteran community. Now, obviously a lot of them fold, a lot of them don't gain headwind, but it's one thing I always say, we don't need more charity. We don't. I mean, the charity's out there. What we need is to take charge of our fucking lives, and we start taking action. And there's so many guys out there who just don't realize the amazing freaking opportunities they have. Like, I would give anything to just be 23 again and just getting out, right? Not because I regret my life at all, but because, you know, more time means more opportunity, right? It's insane.
100%, dude. Yeah, time is our most valuable resource. And yeah. You're totally right.
Yeah, absolutely insane, man. So where is Vet TV, the company, going to be in the next 5 years? Do you know? Have you thought about it? Or is it something you don't think about?
Oh, yeah. So we will have our so we've got 5 divisions. One is the feature film division. We're pushing out 2 to 5 feature films per year. Mm-hmm. And those are being sold on the open marketplace, Amazon, iTunes, whatever. If a distributor gives us a really good deal, then we can license it to a distributor. Mm-hmm. I like Lionsgate because Lionsgate does Tyler Perry. They're very targeted with the theaters that they release the movies in. What if we release our movies targeted around all the bases in the theaters around the bases? Like that's totally possible. And then we'll set these thresholds, you know, if movie sales are blank by, you know, 2 weeks after the release in these small limited release. If we hit this threshold, then we release into more theaters. Hit this threshold, more theaters. And it's like every movie that we do that's good, is the audience is going to get bigger. So that's feature film division. Television division is really what we have now. That's going to be on the app. That'll stay a subscription service. The occasional show might be licensed to a Netflix or to somebody else. If the money's right and not in perpetuity, probably a year or two at a time, just put some cash in our account, enable us to keep making more, bigger and better. And then we'll have our live events division. So I want to make a USO tour that is not a USO tour. I want to make our version of a USO tour that exists in events all over the United States. The infrastructure for that's already been built by the nonprofit Reverend Warriors, which is having events all over the United States. 60,000 people have been to our events with no salaries, all volunteer, bare minimum budgets. Like, it's insane what we've been able to do. We've got the infrastructures there. So now we're bringing entertainment to these events, and we're having musicians, and we're having showings, comedy shows. We're having the biggest names in the community, like Best and Kennedy and Reyes and Burke and Hernandez and all these guys, the entertainers that have already made themselves stars. We're bringing them around to create entertainment for our community. And then, so that's a live event section. And then there'll be the free section, which I want to make the Vet TV app way, way different and better. We're going to need to like rebuild it, or build it from scratch, I think. But it's essentially everything military humor related. So we're talking about a section that just has the TikTok videos, a section that just has memes. We have the website, or the app is broken down into all the branches of service, like Duffelblog is. We've got blogs going in addition to, so that exists for free. And then if it's like, that's how we maintain everybody's attention, like the Chive used to do on their app. They always had something for you to see.
Yep.
And then we're advertising our events, our shows, and our movies on that app that everyone has for free. That's where I see this company in a couple of years. And then a little more than 5 years, I want to have this big, the Great American Festival, Veteran Festival. It's basically Coachella meets Burning Man meets an amusement park. And it's the place for unit reunions. Doesn't matter what unit, when you served. There's no better place to host a unit reunion than at this event. That's how we'll make it really big. Get everyone involved and invested in it. And then we'll have the whole center of, you know, maybe 20 acres is food. We all come together to eat. And then it's each plots of land broken up by branch of service. That's where people are reconnecting. We've got events and shows and music and all kinds of shit going on each of these little plots. And then we've got an area for camping and RVs and stuff. And it becomes this, you know, 4-day experience like a Coachella or Burning Man, where we come together to recreate, parody, and celebrate the military experience, and most importantly, celebrate each other. And that's what the grand thing that I want to have built in like 10 years.
That is an awesome vision, man.
Thank you.
This will be one of the last questions. I'm sure you get people writing you and messaging you all the time, trying to become involved with Vet TV and trying to work with you guys. What is it that you look for in somebody that you bring onto the team?
Sense of humor. Mm-hmm. Good communicator. And can take critique of their work with a smile, because they are grateful knowing they are about to become better at their craft. If I see those things, I'm like, I want to work with them.
That's awesome. Well, dude, number one, I want to acknowledge you, because I think, you know, for you to have started this thing from scratch, like I said before, and to have turned it into what it is now, and now knowing a lot more about the story behind it. I got to hear you speak at Clever Talks last year, but but knowing more about it in this detail, I mean, it's absolutely astounding that you've been able to do that, and that you continue to be motivated to make this quest come true. And I think that's awesome. As far as everything goes, man, I have to say you surprised me with a lot of your answers, and I'm sure you surprised a lot of the audience members. There's so much more depth to you that I don't think people realize is there. And I think one of the things that people should definitely take home from this is the fact that you've put so much work into understanding yourself and how your brain works and what's going to create all of these things, because that in and of itself can be a quest that takes people a lifetime to complete.
Yeah, totally. And I think, first off, thank you very much for the kind words. I do appreciate it. I think that a lot of people don't get to know themselves as well as they should or could, because there's a lot they're not proud of, and they don't like exploring the depths of their own mind and their own past and their own decisions, because there's so much shame there.
Right.
And it's painful to think about all of the things that they've done that they're not proud of. So instead, they don't think about it. They just stay busy with work, friends, television, sports, and whatever. Because as soon as they have a moment alone to actually be with their thoughts, they're like, oh, no, I don't like those thoughts. And I think everyone needs to push through the pain of acknowledging who they have been, who they are, and then create a vision of who they want to be. But you know, I've been a big piece of shit in the past. And when I have forced myself to think about it, I'm like, I don't fucking want to be that ever again.
Right.
And actually, you know, it's like you don't change until you felt enough pain. Well, it's like you got to feel the pain of yourself, of your actions, and accept it. Make a decision about the future and allow yourself to become stronger from that. You got to push through the pain of your own mind. But there's a lot of clarity and there's a lot of hope on the other side if you can push through that pain. A couple more people do that.
100%. And the movie, A Grunt's Life, where can people access that right now?
Fuck yeah. Go to agruntslife.com and purchase it on VetTV or Vimeo.
Great. And VetTV and your social media, do you want to put those links out there?
Sure. I say just go to the App Store on any of your devices and download the VetTV app. And then, so VetTV app, I'm Donnie O'Malley on, just Google Donnie O'Malley and I'll, you know, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, you name it. Also want to make sure that I shout out Reverend Warriors, my nonprofit. I don't run it anymore. Cindy McNally is the president. Nate McDonald is the vice president. They are insanely amazing human beings who have taken that organization to the next level and will continue to do so. So I want people to look up Reverend Warriors, where our mission is to use humor and camaraderie to bring veterans together. It's that simple. Humor and camaraderie. Come together and laugh. If you don't have a dark sense of humor, it's not for you. So don't find another one. But if you got the humor, you like coming together for a good time, then come to some of Reverend Warriors events.
Outstanding, man. Well, again, I want to thank you so much for coming on. And to everybody out there who's listening to this, I mean, this is one I think you got to go back, pull out your notebooks, pull out a pen and take some notes on. There's some great stuff in here. And for all of you, if you're in a bad place right now, just remember, you know, we have the opportunity to be here. We have the opportunity to live. We have the opportunity to take advantage of this amazing country. And there's a lot of other times and places where we could have existed. But right now, we are here. And
we out here.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So we'll talk to you guys soon. We'll be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content. Get out there and live your best lives while you can.
Bro, you're awesome.
All right, guys, there you have it. That is our interview with Donny O'Malley. I hope you were taking notes for those of you who are looking to start your own businesses. And I hope that you were able to get a lot out of that episode. He's put so much work into making Vet TV, into creating the dream he had, and he built it all from scratch. That is absolutely amazing. For those of us in this community who really want to turn this community around, who want to make it so that there's good news out there about veterans, veterans who are dominating in their careers, dominating in business, dominating in their relationships, becoming upstanding members of their communities, we've created a group here at Warrior Soul. It's called the Warriors Obituary Society. And its point, the whole entire point behind it, is to empower its members to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. We do that by delivering an 8-week development program. And in this development program, at first, what you're going to do is you're going to create a vision that you are going to be able to focus on every single day and put work into creating the life that you want to live. From there, we're going to create goals that are going to get you to that vision. And then we're going to work on specifics. We're going to work on getting you to develop your own personalized fitness program. We're going to help you to develop your own personalized finance program so that you can knock down some of that debt, start investing, and start creating the life you want. We're going to work on your relationships. We're going to work on your nutrition. We're going to work on every aspect of your life. And in addition to the coursework, you're also going to get access to our forum. That's where we have conversations. We don't run any of this over social media. We have our own private Slack workspace so that nobody's looking over your shoulder and you're not getting distracted by a bunch of notifications. Once you're through the 8-week development program, the work doesn't stop. We're holding each other accountable to goals every month. You're going to get monthly assignments that are going to force you to work on every aspect of your life. If this is interesting to you, if it's something that you want, then what you need to do is you need to head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. That's warriorobituarysociety.com. From there, you'll be able to check it out. You'll be able to sign up. And if you have any additional questions, you can email me personally at chris@warriorsoulagogi.com. All right. So with that, guys, I want to thank you for listening. If you like this episode, please share it out. And please also head over to iTunes and write us a written rating and review. And we'll be back at you next week with some more amazing content.